ask you this. Let me ask you this.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Sports Central.
Chicago Sports Conversation with Adam Hoge.
Go, go, go.
This is Sports Central.
Go.
On demand and streaming live on WGNRadio.com.
Welcome into Sports Central. I'm Kevin Powell in for Adam Hoge once again. I think Adam Hoge will be back sometime this year, sometime this month, sometime before baseball season starts. Joe Brand sitting in again.
Yeah.
All the Redbirds were buzzing.
Flying,
and flocking. And I was like, you know what? Let's bring Joe back in.
Nice.
He's a ratings machine for the Redbirds. We're huge in the Redbird demo.
Yeah, our ratings down in Bloomington Normal were skyrocketing.
Off the charts, yeah. Competing with JBC and WZND. So I'm I am fresh from Sox Park, 35th and Shields, Joe. We just did the media day for the White Sox. It's one of the great days of the year. And it was amazing. Do you want to go through the food now,
well,
or should
you know
we
what?
Save this?
No, I'm okay with going with it now. I'm looking through your Twitter. The knuckleballs. I didn't even see this.
Mm-hmm.
I guess why don't we
let's just start with the food.
Okay.
But
that's the thing. It's so broad. Sandwich, appetizer, dessert. I mean, it really does look like there was a lot. And I hate to say what was your favorite, because I'm sure everything was a little bit special.
Well, why don't I do this? I'll go through some of the new amenities they have there. We'll get to the food in a few minutes after that.
That sounds good.
We're going to play back an interview with Cochran had on WGN this morning. Ed Fritz, he was the head coach for Clayton Custer and Bed Richardson when they were in high school. So looking forward to hearing that. Interesting perspective as Loyola gets ready to head to San Antonio as they play Michigan on Saturday in the Final Four. All right, so at the Sox Media Day, we were at the Chicago Sports Depot, which is the sports store directly across 35th. It's
right.
Kind of connected if you walk over that bridge. It's fairly new. I would say that whole extension of the ballpark's been around for probably
5 years?
5 to 10 years or so. Maybe probably closer to 10 years, to be honest. But it's kind of evolved over time. There's the Sox bar and restaurant over there as well. So anyways, in the Chicago Sports Depot located near Gate 5, they have a virtual reality batting cage. And some like poor White Sox intern got to demonstrate in front of like a whole bunch of media
how to use it.
She did very well.
Oh, she did.
Yeah.
Okay.
So basically, it's like the VR headset,
uh-huh.
and you put it on, and then there's a bat that connects to it, and the bat's all got sensors all over it. And it looks like, there's a big screen so everyone can watch what you're doing.
Yeah, what you're seeing.
Right.
Okay.
Fans have 90 seconds to hit as many home runs as they can and rack up points based on distance of the batted balls. Fans who score the most points on select nights will receive prizes.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. The VR cage will be available to fans when the gates open during all 2018 White Sox games. It's developed by Major League Baseball, because virtual reality is like everywhere now.
And, yeah,
everybody's trying to incorporate it into something.
I think the Diamondbacks are doing this as well.
There's only a handful of ballparks, and the White Sox are one of them.
Well, it's cool because this really appeases to everybody. You got kids, you got drunk adults that just want to go and hit a virtual baseball as hard
as they
can.
That'll go well. The drunk guy's on their way out.
But that's the thing.
Who am I? You guessed it. Yo, I'm Moncada.
No, yeah, everyone's going to be impersonating at bats and batting stances.
That was one of my favorite things to do in college. Yeah. I'd be like, dude, who am I right now? Who am I?
Moises Salou.
I mean, I'm Ken Griffey, obviously. How did you not get that?
Well, the computer screen's up too high. I can't see where your elbows are.
No, I'm saying like people would never actually
guess
the ones.
No, I know, but I'm saying that was a poor Ken Griffey Jr. stance.
It was horrible. The White Sox have partnered with Revolution Brewing. You a big beer drinker?
I one of my go-to craft beers, I don't even know if it's a craft beer, but Anti-Hero by Revolution is my all-time favorite.
I would clarify that as a craft brew. Nice little IPA situation.
My friends were talking about that, and the best thing about the quote in there is, well, White Sox fans like to drink beer, So we explored. I'm not breaking any news here. Here's the quote. I'm not breaking any news here, but White Sox fans like to drink, and we've heard over and over that people appreciate a wider selection.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just feeding to what sells.
But it's funny how teams always keep saying that people want more and more, and then now I'm starting to hear, you know what, I just like a nice Miller Lite and a hot dog at the game.
That's true. I mean, that's what people want to go to. They want to go and escape and get a cheap beer and a cheap hot dog. I think
having the options is nice. Like, if you're somebody who goes to a lot of games, you're probably going to have your go-to anyways. Like, for me, if I'm going as a fan, I know what I'm getting. I'm getting a Miller Lite and a pull of sausage. But, you know, the fourth inning, fifth inning rolls around, like, okay, let's do a lap. Let's do a walk around. And I'm like, cool, I'll try this or I'll try that.
And sometimes people are intimidated by too many options, too, because they don't know what's good. It's not like you're sampling beers.
Yeah, you ever been to a bar or restaurant with someone and they hand you the menu and, like, they start having an anxiety attack?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I hate these menus with so many options.
Some people will scout the menu before we go to the place. That drives me nuts.
I do that every single time
I really go out. You
really do? Yes. Absolutely.
You don't want to.
Do you like to discover the menu with the person you're with? It depends. Like, if I was going on a date with someone, I wouldn't just sit down and be like, I'm getting the linguine, we're going to get the shrimp cocktail to start, and maybe some tiramisu for dinner.
Just don't even look at the menu. I'll have the number three, and you know this.
I think that would annoy. I still look at the menu, though. Like, ahead of time, I'll go online and I'll, like, scout it out, get a feel of what the menu's about. And then when I go there, I still look at the menu.
I don't
sit down and
clean slate, element of surprise. I don't want to go in there having the slightest bit of idea what I'm going to get, because I want to be entertained.
You just
with the solid food choice that I chose, and if I enjoy it, then I feel like I've accomplished something.
Like, you went with the right pick.
Yes. Yes.
See, I like
good
to,
judgment in a high tense situation.
Yeah, I like to better my odds ahead of time by preparing.
Yeah. I like working on the fly.
And doing some research.
I like working on the fly. That's why I didn't prepare at all for today's show.
Maybe do a Yelp visit before I go to the restaurant.
You're one of those guys, huh?
A little bit, but I don't trust the people.
Have you ever written a Yelp review?
No.
Yeah, no, neither have I.
But I don't trust the people. Like, so I don't care necessarily what the people say, because I'm like, you could just be a horrible customer. Those exist. I know the customer's always right, but some people suck at being customers, and they're needy, and they're picky about stuff, and they give these unrealistic views of what, like, they think they should be getting. So, for me, I can get a pretty good sense of what a bar or a restaurant should be by more so of the pictures of the atmosphere of the place.
I appreciate that for
attire.
Yes, attire, yeah. Kind of setting. Are kids allowed? How's
right.
the music? That's
right.
That's good stuff. TVs are huge.
I'm almost more interested in the atmosphere and the vibe of the whole thing rather than individual menu items.
I
will say, if somebody's like, if you see nothing but phenomenal reviews about a certain item on the menu,
it might be a little fixed.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm like, okay, maybe I should go with
that. Okay, it's a solid choice.
But for the most part, I'm not going to necessarily, if some lady's like, no, I don't know, the service wasn't great, my salad wasn't the best I've had.
I've totally
like,
seen that
care.
Woman in my head
yeah.
when reading.
We all know what she looks like. What else? Okay, so back to Revolution Brewing Sox Social Tap Room. They're teaming up with Revolution Brewing. The social media hub has moved. So they had a social media hub in the 100 level. That's moved to a larger space, been renamed Revolution Brewing Sox Social. Damn, that's tough to say. Tap Room. The Tap Room will feature Sox selfie spots, a kiosk for fans to redeem MLB ballpark app check-in offers, and various social media-driven activities throughout the season. Food and beverages also are available in the space. Fans can access the tap room from the stairs located near Section 157.
That's cool.
Something.
They're incorporating a lot. Last year, they were doing the whole season, not season tickets, but individual ticket sales where mm-hmm. you can only get the opportunity on your phone. You know, it's the way things are going right now, and I think the Sox are adapting well. You said you took some pictures of the actual field, the grandstands and everything,
yeah.
with the new paint, the new
right.
numbers. It looks really good, right?
Yeah, it looks great. And I wish I could have a before and after, because it's almost hard to pinpoint exactly what's different. But it just looks better, and it has more of a classic look to it.
I agree.
Rather than this, look, we all know when it was first built, what Sox Park's evolved into since it first opened, it's pretty incredible. I think they realized that they screwed up from the get-go, and they've made some serious drastic changes. But if you do check my Twitter, at KPaul720, there's a picture, and I basically was trying to point out the fact that they had moved the retired numbers. They were on the facade behind home plate up near the broadcasting booths and stuff like that. Now, half the numbers are down the first baseline, half down the third baseline. But if you take a close look at it, they added some new paint, and it's almost like a dark gray or maybe even a pint of like forest green.
Yeah, I was going to say a dark green look.
Like a dark green, right?
And you know, that's the old school look. That's
what
I mean. Comiskey
it almost feels a little like that's the Wrigley charm, right? That it has that dark, right. lot of green. You know, the steel is painted in green. It just kind of has that old school vibe to it. I think a lot of that started for the Sox was when they put in green seating.
Yep.
Remember they had that light blue that looked just bad
when
faded.
The new Comiskey was first built. I remember in grammar school getting in an argument with my friend saying the seats were blue. He's like, no, they're green now. And you're right. It's just everything is very clean, very modern.
And it looks
very
uniformed.
Flush. Yeah, exactly. And it's got a good twist of old school, but still a modern ballpark setting. And now the numbers that are retired down the lines, they kind of got a 3D look. Is that what it always was? I can't really remember.
Before
it was just painted, right?
Yeah, it looked horrible before. And I always thought that. I never really said that, but it just looked kind of cheap. But now it has definitely sort of a defined look to it.
And now they can spread it out when they get more.
Yeah, it looked awkward where it was before.
Although, who's the next White Sox number to be retired?
Juan Uribe should have his number retired.
That'd be cool. Maybe Ozzie Guillen?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. I'd have to pull up the list of who is and isn't retired. Well, Burley's retired. Canerco's retired.
Yeah, Burley and Canerco are obviously the most recent.
Chris Sale?
I doubt that.
Not enough years, right?
I agree. He never won a Cy Young.
Well,
I would put my money on Guillen, unless...
Ozzie?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, just the fact of former player, first World Series,
right.
Just a lot ties into it.
I can get behind that. Fans love him.
Yeah.
Fans to this day still want him back as a manager.
Well, that's just...
Many of their fans do.
And you know what's funny,
I mean, too. Bears fans want Ditka back, so it's...
Well, exactly. Because some White Sox fans want A.J. Pierzynski to be the manager, though, too.
The way baseball's going now, where it's like younger youth... Look, Aaron Boone hadn't managed, hadn't coached.
He's Craig Counsell.
Broadcast booth right to the freaking Yankees dugout. That's what they want now, it seems like. But, you know, Joe Maddon's one of the oldest in baseball, and he's arguably the best manager in baseball. Him and Bochy.
It is. It's a weird way that the game is going now, and I think the main factor of it is to get a good mix of young and old, get a good mix of running a clubhouse and using sabermetrics, but not too many, and being able to deal with so many personalities, and they feel like guys like Aaron Boone and like... I keep bringing up Craig Counsell because he's another guy that hadn't managed before, hadn't coached. And even Robin Ventura. I mean, he was just a former player.
That one did not work out well.
But it's just... It's really surprising how organizations spend so much time, so much money, so much energy into their minor league system, building up players and doing everything right and creating roles for guys like a quality control coach.
Right.
Just to make sure the mentality in the clubhouse is okay. But then managers are guys who have never managed before.
Yeah.
It's a little surprising that way. Obviously it's worked out in a couple of ways.
I think in some ways because it is sort of a general manager's game now.
It is.
Where the general managers dictate almost more than a manager does. Not necessarily directly. It's not like they're phoning in directions during a game, but in terms of constructing a team and probably even preparing, I mean, Maddon talks about it, how much information he gets handed from Theo and Jed.
They have a lot more control of the way they want to present the team and the organization.
Because they know analytics, and if a manager, that old school, like, curmudgeon-y manager who you don't even really see in baseball much anymore, who is, you know, stubborn on just doing, you know, too much bunting or too much stealing or the way you're constructing your lineup every day. And the managers are the ones who decide who they're going to sign to anyways, who they're going to trade. I'm sure you factor in your manager's decision, but, you know, so...
Yeah, I mean, you've got the younger guys making the bigger decisions and the managers handling the baseball type things. David Stearns.
Well, that's the point I was getting at. The guys that work directly with mechanics and things like that who have seen so much, like a Chili Davis comes in and he's seen so many different batters and the different mechanics and the different things that go into his swing. Well, those guys are working directly technically with a player.
Mm-hmm.
In many ways, Maddon's almost there as sort of a mentor, father figure, leader,
decision maker still, though, too.
Still a decision maker, but I think that's why you can go the youth route there a little bit more, because you basically need that guy to just put the arm around the player or guide them in a certain direction. Of course, they're going to add a little tweak here and there, but in some ways, the assistant coaches, I guess, hitting coaches, the guys who are working directly with players probably are going to have that experience matters more there, I think, is what baseball teams are going with.
It's a great time.
Rather than being able to have that likeness and personality and connecting with a younger generation, that's more the manager's job anyways. And Madden does it too, because Madden's like a ageless soul. The guy's awesome. You know, people always ask, who's the coolest Cub, man? I'm like, Madden's the coolest Cub. He's cooler than all the freaking players. He's guy's awesome. So I totally see where he can connect with the players, where then you can insert the veteran coaches into the one-on-one instructional, mechanical, et cetera, et cetera.
It's just a great time to be a baseball coach, because there's so many opportunities. There's so many jobs available in every organization right now, from the minor leagues up to the majors.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Like I said, they're creating positions for these guys because I think teams and organizations are really realizing how mental the game is, and they just want to make sure everyone is loose, everyone is cool, there's no hostility whatsoever, and they're going to bring in whoever they can to make that happen.
A couple more features at Guaranteed Rate Field before we're going to get to this interview with Ed Fritz. He was the high school basketball coach for Clayton Custer and Ben Richardson, and I think he'll have a pretty great perspective on those guys and the current run they're on, because those two kids have played together for pretty much their whole lives, and they've done nothing but win. So he was on with Steve Cochran and Dave Bennett this morning. We're going to play that back in just a couple minutes. And then after that, we'll get into even more baseball talk. Joe and I are going to kind of preview the White Sox season and the Cubs season, and then we'll finish talking about Sox Media Day, where I tried all the new food, and it was awesome. But a couple other features at Guaranteed Rate Field, the Craft Cave Express. The Craft Cave is a really cool spot. It's down the first base line, and if you've ever noticed, it's the wired fence in right field for the Sox, but then there's benches out there, and there's always people hanging out there, but behind that is the Craft Cave. It's a huge bar, and I'm glad they redid it last year and kind of reamped it and relaunched it, because it's such a cool spot where you can still see the field, but it's like a full-blown sports bar in there.
Is it on the concourse?
No, it's below the concourse, essentially.
By, like, right field?
By, like, the right field core, the right foul line, the foul pole.
Right.
Where there's almost, like, a little trench where people are sitting behind the fencing.
Yeah, I know what you're talking
about. And then behind that little patio area is the Craft Cave.
Is it, like, chilled? Is it one of those things you got to bring a parka? Or
It's cool down there.
But just the right amount of cool, not too frigid?
Right.
Okay. Kevin, isn't that next to the bullpen?
Yes, right.
Yeah.
And you can actually see. You can see. Yeah, yeah. It's a cool spot. If you're ever looking to just walk around and, like, just change the scenery or whatever, it's a cool spot. But the fans can now browse nearly 50 different craft beer selections at this newly renovated location near Section 542. So basically, it's the Craft Cave Express, because they have a ton of craft beers. I think it was like 80 or something when we went and toured it last year. And they
right.
have all these different burgers and stuff you can get there. So now they have a new Express at Section 542 if you're looking for more craft beer. A new feature, extended netting. Remember when this was a thing and people were so like, oh, I don't know, man. They're going to put the netting like around the whole thing. We can't see the field now.
Yep.
You don't even notice it at all.
How far does it reach?
And end of the dugouts.
I'm a big advocate of this.
So am I.
Just because, I mean, well, yeah, you watch just as much of baseball as I do, if not more. And it's not a matter of being a tough guy, and it's not a matter of staying focused on the game. You can look down at your phone, which everyone does,
for two seconds. Yep, yep.
Put your head up, and all of a sudden...
Well, that was my argument. People are like, you should be watching the game. Nobody, not even the players, not even the manager, watches every second of every single game. It's impossible. You could be with your buddy and look to your left to say something to him, look to your right, and a ball could be coming at you.
So you could even have a glove.
You could even have a glove. So for this argument that you need to be dialed into the game, okay, yeah, people probably are a little bit less dialed in now than they used to be because of phones. But even if there weren't any cell phones, people would still be distracted. You'd be talking to somebody. You'd be yelling for a beer. You'd
exactly.
be yelling
and
for a
I
hot dog.
I was just going to say that everyday baseball fan that orders a beer, how do you order a beer? You look to your side, you talk to the beer guy, you reach into your wallet, grab some money. That's exactly what's going to happen.
It's a no-brainer. You know,
And when players reserve seats for their family and their kids, they ask to get behind home plate because that's where the screen is.
Right.
They want their friends and family to be safe.
Yeah.
So why not make that a necessity for everyone?
There's a new grab-and-go section at 142. It'll offer a variety of ready-to-eat items, including sweet and salty snacks, as well as healthy food items. It'll serve beer, Coca-Cola products, and juices. I kind of like that, because there's not enough grab-and-go if you just want something quick.
That's true.
It sounds like it's just like a little
Lunchable.
A little, like, deli-type thing.
Are the healthy foods, one of them being the salads that Dave Ennett got today?
No, I think that salad actually is club level. Let me see here. Yeah,
oh, you gotta be.
It's a stadium club. If you want to eat healthy, you gotta be the club.
Oh, okay.
You know
that
how it is.
That makes sense.
And then the Xfinity Kids Zone, rebranded Xfinity Kids Zone at a guaranteed rate. So that's basically the same thing. But, you know, that's the one out in left field. The big patio kids can go up there. It's like a mini baseball field. So there's some new LED ribbon boards that have been installed around the ballpark's facade. What else? And then the Sports Depot, which I mentioned earlier, has kind of been renovated. It's just a cooler feel in there. There's some old, like, White Sox photos and images and stuff like that. So
that's not good news for my friend. My friend always goes to Sox games and gets basically hammered.
And goes in the Sports
goes
Depot?
Goes in the Sports.
Oh, God.
Is missing for about three innings.
There's some awesome stuff
in there.
And
comes back with a personalized T-shirt, a hat.
Yeah.
A glove, a bat, and we're like, where did you go? He's like, I don't even want to talk. I want to go home. I spent too much money already.
Yeah, I ended up buying some stuff today. Niece and nephew are coming to town for Easter. I'm like, this is perfect.
That's good.
Stock them up on a little White Sox gear for opening day. All right, so that's a little preview of some of the new amenities at Guaranteed Rate Field. We'll get into the food a little bit later, and we'll actually talk some baseball. We'll talk about the Sox roster and the Cubs roster. And maybe, Joe, if you have some question marks for both teams heading into the year, a lot more question marks for the White Sox. This is an important year for them, and of course it is for the Cubs too, but I don't think there's a whole ton of question marks for them right now.
Not
it's just
really.
Sort of wait and see how things shake out. But we do want to get to this interview. Ed Fritz, high school basketball coach for Clayton Custer and Bed Richardson, two of the stars of the Loyola Ramblers, joined Steve Cochran and Dave Ennett this morning to talk about his two former players.
High school coach Ed Fritz, who joins us now, legendary basketball coach in his own right. Good morning, Coach!
Hey, good morning. Hey, thanks for having me.
How proud are you of those guys?
I am really proud and really happy. And by the way, Clayton could not dunk in third grade, but he could hit threes like he was breathing.
Ed Fritz been at Blue Valley Northwest High for, what is it, almost 20 years?
I just finished my 16th year here at Northwest.
Well, let's round up. And tell me about these kids as high schoolers. How good were they?
Well, you know, I just got so lucky. I have a son the same age as Ben and Clay, so we Ben's dad, Dave, and I started a team in third grade, and I not only got to coach them all the way through elementary school and middle school, and then they were at Northwest, and I got to coach them in high school. So they were just great kids to be around, and we had so much fun.
Now, they won two championships for you, did they not?
Yes, they went to. They played in four straight championships. We took second their freshman and sophomore years, and we were able to win it their junior and senior year.
So the Tennessee game, Custer's gets the winning shot on a shot that will forever be known as the bounce. Where were you when that shot went in?
You know, I was had a great seat right down towards the front, and it was just really kind of great because he came off the court and I was there and got to hug him, and
that's great.
And the cameras were on us the whole time, and so that kind of Ben and Clay have kind of got a kick out of making me talk to people and interview with people because you know I'm great at talking, but we kind of shared a good laugh about it. But it was just such a good moment, and to be able to share it with them was really special.
Now, I don't want to put you on the spot here, Coach, but is it true that you went to Dallas expecting to be there for just one game?
Didn't bring enough clothes.
Yeah, I didn't bring clothes, and I just wanted to be part of it, and I was going to head back after the game. And you know, both of them just said, hey, you got to stay, Coach, and so I stayed and went and got some clothes and was able to be to the next game and see that winning shot.
So you had to go clothes shopping so you could stay in town.
Yes, I did. I was happy to do it.
The great thing is when you're a coach is you can go to the Steve Cochran clothing line. You know, sweats, shorts, you know, a golf shirt, whatever. You know, you can go casual.
I'm a gym teacher, so that's my attire anyway. So that's
Yeah, totally. I get it. So let's talk for a second about what's going to happen this weekend. These kids seem so level-headed, and they seem so ready for their big moment. Are they feeling extra pressure, or are they just so happy they're there? They're just going to continue to cruise.
You know, I think they're just enjoying it. I think they're just having fun watching Ben get interviewed after the game and see how composed he was and how he was able to you know, talk about how, you know, he's part of something special about the academics at Loyola. They're just really well-rounded kids, and I think they're going to be fine. I think they know that, you know, growing up, these two kids never passed the eye test. People would look at them and say, oh, these guys are nothing, and then they just would prove them wrong if the game started. And I think they got a little chip on their shoulder about that, and so they'll be ready to go Saturday.
Clayton Custer, Steve, went to Iowa State and played 1 year there for Fred Hoiberg, now the coach of the Bulls, and Ben Richardson came here to Loyola. Were you surprised, Coach, that they both ended up together in college once Clayton decided to move on?
You know, I'm really not. Once Clayton decided that he was going to transfer, I know Ben was his first call, and Ben kind of told him, hey, we got a really good situation here. We got a great coach, and we're gonna get better and better. And I think his first visit was to Loyola, and he just loved it. He loved the city of Chicago, and I think that sold it for him. And it's sure proven to be a good fit for him and Loyola and Chicago.
In 16 years, I'm sure you've had players achieve success at different levels of the game. Have you? And I think you had a player at Kansas State also on Saturday playing against these guys. But have you had players in the Final Four before?
I have not. I had one in the Sweet 16 a few years ago, but have not had anybody in the Final Four. And we've been lucky enough to be pretty good the last couple of years to win a state championship. And we got some kids going to Division One, but nothing like the success Ben and Clay has had.
Now you got to be on cloud nine, man.
That's great.
It's a great feeling, and it's just fun. You know, Ben and Clay come from great families, and they're just so excited, you know, sharing another moment with them, and can't wait for it to continue.
It's a good inspiration for kids listening who are getting into Loyola and getting into college basketball. A lot of folks only pay close attention during March Madness, but Coach, every time I've seen, it's Coach Ed Fritz again, every time I've seen you referenced about these guys, you keep saying they put the work in. So were these guys natural athletes, gifted athletes, or did they have to go the extra mile to get there?
Well, they've both gone the extra mile. To be honest, Clay, when Clay was born, he was a good player. I saw him win a national three-point contest in third grade. He was just, was unbelievably fast with the basketball and could shoot it. Ben was all arms and legs in third and fourth grade. And he just started developing and growing. But the thing that, you know, they just put in the time, you know, at high school, I'd come in the morning and these guys would already be in here shooting for an hour or two, and they always would stay late and work. And I think the work ethic is what set them up. And after that game against Tennessee, you know, I had a lot of people ask me, you know, you ever seen Clayton do that before? And they asked Ben the same thing. And we both said, yeah, we've seen him do it a lot of times. So, you know, it's special, but, you know, they prepared for the moment, and being prepared really helps you.
They got any younger siblings coming up?
I wish, but they're the last ones in their family, and I don't think I'm going to have. In high school, we went 94-6 for 4 years.
Wow.
With those guys.
How about that? 94-6.
Yeah, it's just a great run, and I'll never experience that again. Even though we won the last two state championships, but it hasn't been like that because this has been really special.
All right, here's the big question, Coach. Did you get to meet Sister Jean?
I have got to meet Sister Jean, and I talked to her, had a great talk. In fact, I put something out on Twitter that Sister Jean and I are going to start a talk show, and instead of talking, I'll just punch people. she is just great. She's so sharp, and she's so
she's unbelievable.
I got to meet her this last summer too when I took my team to a camp in Chicago, and what a thrill! The kids on the team just love her so much, and she's such a good inspiration. And what a great story!
You know about the trash talking going on with Jalen Rose's grandmother and her?
I do not know that.
Oh, you got to hear this, Coach. Stand by, Super Joe. Play for the coach. What Jalen Rose's grandmother said about the Michigan Loyola game this weekend. Stand by, Coach, and check this out.
Gene, it's been a good ride, but it's over Saturday. Go Blue, 100.
So, Coach, just to review, that's a 100-year-old trash talking a 98-year-old.
Well, I'm still got my money on Sister Jean.
Yeah, I agree. And here's the thing, and Dave and I talked about this. The last thing you want at the senior home is bulletin board material in the cafeteria.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying?
You're exactly right.
Coach, thanks for coming on. I know this is not your favorite part of your job, but it's great to be able to talk about these kids that have meant so much to you for so many years, and you're a heck of a spokesman for them. So I hope you're where are you going to be watching the game this weekend?
I'm going to leave Thursday and drive down there, and I'll be waiting for my hug after the game.
So. Yes, sir. Like that. All right, Coach. I hope it goes as well as we think it's going to. Stand by. There you go, Coach Ed Fritz.
Coach Fritz with Steve Cochran and Dave Bennett this morning on WGN. Good stuff there. Get the interview at WGNradio.com. Get all Steve's podcasts there.
Nothing says March Madness like a couple of elderly women just going at it. You know,
I love it. Great stuff. Jalen Rose and Sister Jean got a little beef right now. So looking forward to that. That's going to be a whole ton of fun Saturday. We're going to take a quick time out. We come back, Joe and I, because it's opening week, Joe. I'm pumped, man. I was at the ballpark today. I'm ready to just watch some baseball.
Me too. The weather's somewhat there, halfway there, I guess.
Temperature-wise,
you know. It's decent enough. And yeah, I mean,
fortunately, both teams are kicking off the year on the road, which was...
I mean, we've had spring training for a month now, and guys like you and I, we watch a ton. We actually go out there and see some, so it's somewhat felt like baseball season.
Yeah.
But that grind.
But now I want it to be real.
Right, that real grind, that's about to come.
I'm ready for it. We're going to preview both teams. We'll kind of talk about what's we're looking for this season, any question marks we may have with the White Sox and Cubs next on Sports Central.
What?
Yes!
What?
No! What?
Let me think.
Ooh. Yeah!
Good talk, Coach. Thanks.
Maybe we should stick to radio.
He's got a point.
Chicago's sports conversation. This is Sports Central with Adam Hogue.
Kevin Powell in for Adam Hogue. Joe Brand also sitting in for the second straight day. Couple Redbirds with you. Adam Hogue will be back tomorrow from his trip. Looking forward to seeing Adam again. And I'm sure he'll have plenty of baseball talk. Adam, the new one of two new postgame hosts for the White Sox on WGN. He and Mark Carman will share those duties this upcoming season. Joe Brand's in studio. I'm Kevin Powell. Thanks for joining us on Sports Central. We wanted to do sort of a full season preview, I guess we can call it. I don't know if we're going to have time to get too crazy into depth, but let's start with the Cubs, though, Joe. Joe, by the way, the voice of the Kane County Cougars.
Have we talked about that?
A little bit.
At all? Yeah.
All right. So for the Cubs, the I guess if we're going to look at and nitpick at any question marks here for the Cubs, because it's a full and complete roster, I guess my reservations would be still not completely sold on the bullpen. And I'm not all that worried about the leadoff spot. I know Cub fans, for some reason, seem fixated on who's going to be the leadoff man. When there probably isn't going to be a leadoff man, quote-unquote leadoff man. It's going to be a rotation of players, and I think that's just fine. It's going to be Ian Happ. It's going to be Albert Elmora. It's going to be Ben Zobrist. Maybe we even see Schwarber a little bit. I'm curious in your thoughts on the leadoff spot, Joe, because I don't really have any worries when it comes to that slot, although I think what happened is people saw it go from one extreme to the other. We saw Dexter Fowler 2 years ago, who was just raked at the leadoff spot. Everything, it was you go, we go. We know the whole story. The offense was driven by Fowler at the top. And then last year was a complete disaster because they opted to go with Kyle Schwarber at the leadoff spot for a large chunk of the season, and nobody really ever settled in on that spot except for Anthony Rizzo.
And a little bit of Wilson Contreras, too.
Yes, a little bit of that.
Well, I think that's the biggest thing is you never see a baseball team have inconsistency at the leadoff spot, let alone a good baseball team, let alone a great baseball team. And I think that's what made so many Cub fans just kind of go haywire last year, because Madden was so fixated on having Kyle Schwarber leadoff. This is the way we're going to go. It's not old school baseball anymore. Why do you want to put a guy like Kyle Schwarber to leadoff? His reasoning was, he's your best hitter, so let's get him his most at-bats as possible, which makes sense,
right?
But how can't you make that same argument with a guy like Chris Bryant or a guy like Anthony Rizzo?
Exactly.
And a perfect storm happens. Kyle Schwarber just cannot hit the ball like he did in a shortened season of 2016. If you want to break down the mechanics of him, it just really looked like he was trying to pull everything, trying to yank everything. Going down to AAA actually did help him out. But I think them going into it this year, and the Cubs not knowing who's going to lead off, and if they go in with the mindset of we'll figure it out as we go along, then there's not too much pressure on one certain guy. And I think the top favorite that came out of the spring training was Ian Happ,
mm-hmm.
because of how well of a spring training he's had. But there's a lot of Albert Almora fans out there, me being one of them.
Yeah.
I kind of agree with you. If you're going to have Happ, if you're going to have Almora, if you're going to have Zobrist, those are all good choices. And I think if the Cubs have a platoon in the leadoff spot, if that can work, then just go with that. The fact that they went in with Kyle Schwarber, this is our guy, there's no way around. Because how many times did Madden back himself up even when Schwarber was struggling last year? And what resulted? He went down to AAA. So that's not a guy you can have leading off consistently. So I think going into it this year, it's a little bit of a better approach, with it being a little bit of an unknown.
Yeah, and Cub fans are all in on Ian Happ and Albert Almora, just like you. So I'm curious this season to see if either one of those guys forces Madden's hand and Madden starts cutting into Hayward's playing time in right field. So we're getting in year three here, and I get the argument of keeping Hayward out there. He's a hell of a defender. He basically shuts down right field, and the Cubs' offense is normally good enough to cover for his issues at the plate. I know they were better last year compared to two seasons ago, but they still weren't very good, and he's making more mechanical adjustments and whatever, blah, blah, blah. We've heard the same story now from Hayward the past 3 years. I'm just curious if, okay, they all kind of get together and like, okay, these are two important key players moving forward. We got to be careful that we're not limiting their experiences or limiting at-bats or limiting reps in outfield. Like, could you see them potentially cutting into Hayward's time?
I can, because I think the notion of Jason Hayward needs to play every day because of how much money he's making and how much defensively he helps out the Cubs is no longer a story. I think it's the fact that he cannot hit the ball. Like you said, he did improve. I mean, a .259 batting average in 2017, that's awfully a lot better than .230.
He did have a positive WAR.
He did.
But much of that's defensive.
But the thing is, going into this year, and it's somewhat similar to the Schwarber leading off situation, not Schwarber's all-around bat, nobody's relying on Jason Hayward. Everyone wants him to get better. Everyone wants him to improve and become the hitter that the Cubs thought he would be. But nobody's relying on that to happen. Unfortunately,
it's almost like the cherry on top if it happens at this point.
Exactly. And it's you're right. It's an overcrowded outfield.
Which is a good problem to have.
It is.
It's been nothing but basically good problems for the Cubs over the past couple of years.
But the unfortunate thing is the two odd men out, in some sense, are Ian Happ and Albert Almora, because they are not the players that have the everyday, I guess, expectancy from the front office and the coaching staff at this moment. They'd like to see if they can get to that point, but again, they're log jammed with Jason Hayward in right and a little bit of Kyle Schwarber in left. So I would like to see Albert Almora get a daily basis, because he's a guy I think can be the everyday player. Ian Happ is more of so much of a utility role. You can use him in the infield if you need to. You can use him in left, right, or center. But Almora is just so solid and complete defensively. He hits well against lefties. He's just definitely that speed guy you could use at the top of the lineup, even if that is an old way of thinking of a baseball lineup. But I really would like to see Albert Almora get a lot more playing time this year.
We're on the doorsteps of opening day, Joe. Top of mind for you, Joe Brand, going into the Cubs season, the 2018 Cubs, what are you first thinking of? Whether it's a question mark or whether it's a level of excitement?
Well, I mean, you mentioned the leadoff spot, but I really think another big part is the bullpen. I mean, the main reason they got as far as they did in the postseason was because of Wade Davis. And the way the playoffs are
arguably the MVP last year.
Oh, yeah, 100%. 100%. And that's the thing. Baseball these days, in the postseason, everything relies on your bullpen. Because I don't know what it is with managers just getting so antsy about yanking guys and making a change just to not have that hindsight. But apparently now, late-inning relievers are so huge in postseason baseball. I do like what the Cubs did because of this. They don't have... I mean, Brandon Morrow is going to be the closer. That's the plan. But he doesn't have to be the closer. You do have Steve Cishek. You do have Mike Montgomery. You do have C.J. Edwards. Why not maybe go a platoon route there? Not so much every single time, but it's shown that in the postseason you need your late-inning guys. You need guys who can shut down the ball game in the most intense situation. So why not give these quote-unquote closers a bit of a breather throughout the regular season, keep them a little bit more fresh, and have somewhat of a late-inning bullpen by committee. I don't want to say closing committee by committee, but give these guys more time, more rest, so that they're more available to get everything done in the postseason.
I still don't trust C.J. Edwards. Until he can throw strikes consistently, I don't have any trust in him.
Yeah, in the postseason, I would totally agree with you
there. We know the sort of stuff he has, and it's dominant. Mm-hmm. And we saw it in the postseason. We'd come in and three up, three down, nasty stuff, and then the next game he can't throw a strike.
A hanger to Bryce Harper that went bye-bye very, very quickly.
I remember that one? Yeah.
I do like the moves they made. I like how they didn't totally sell out on Wade Davis.
See, I think they should have re-signed
Davis. I remember you saying that.
Because he projects long-term. He's not a guy that's just a thrower. He knows how to pitch. He's got four pitches in his arsenal. The guy understands it. He gets it.
What was his deal with Colorado? 4 years?
There's a four-year vesting option, I believe. But it's 3 years, and it's a large number.
I mean, when it comes down to it, it's obviously the money. I get why you say that. I'm not surprised. Well, that
how much
didn't...
better would you feel if you had Davis and Morrow in the eighth spot? 100%.
100%.
It would be like this team has zero weaknesses right now, as if they already don't. But you know, bullpen with Davis and Morrow is
it's
one-two punch.
It's almost unfair. Yeah. I mean, that's basically Morrow and Jansen. It essentially is. You make the argument they got to look into the future. I guess you can't really say that with the giant contract to Yu Darvish. But, I mean, starters are more valuable than closers. And
do you have a win total projection and a long-term projection here?
I'm never good with those things. But honestly, Kev, I mean, they look really freaking good. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's no surprise, but it's just the rotation is just so solid, so complete. Coming into this year more so than last year, you know a lot more things with guys like Jason Hayward, Addison Russell, Kyle Schwarber. The Ian Happ situation, I did kind of want to bring it up. Great article by Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic. Have you seen some of the things that Ian Happ is doing, like specifically what he's trying to improve on? One is, I mean, he's a switch hitter. He's trying to work on his right-handed hitting, which will be against left-handers, which Almora is so good at. So he's almost trying to up his value in that regard against Almora. He's working on agility training. He's making his body more of a center fielder and able to cover a lot of ground throughout a long season of time. He's trying to beat Albert Almora in that position. That's what I gathered from that article. I could be way off, but it just seems like this guy is just so focused on being the guy for the Chicago Cubs this year. That's the kind of mindset that every team wants, and I really think that could pay off dividends for them this year. You've already seen what he's able to do in spring training.
92 wins for the Cubs last year, so 93, 94, 95 wins. Did you go that far?
I mean, the division has improved. I guess so, yeah. I'm totally speaking optimistically here, but they have improved so much from last year is what I've gathered. Everything last season was reflecting on a championship, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing or what they did wrong, but all the talk was reflecting on the first World Series in 108 years. So now it was tinkering and improving, and I just really like the approach they went. and it's just really hard to see them do worse.
Got to figure they'd have more than 92 wins, but I think it's pretty safe to say that we're all in on the fact that they're probably going to win the division again.
Yeah,
likely heading back to the NLCS. Okay, that's Cubs talk. Let's do a little White Sox action here. For me, I guess the biggest thing we're all obviously keeping an eye on is individual growth this year. Yoan Moncada, what's he going to do in his first full season? Lucas Giolito was damn impressive in the spring. He was, to me, was probably the guy who stood out the most to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess let's go back to what I initially asked you with the Cubs. Do you think 2018 White Sox, what's the first thing that comes top of mind to you?
Well, definitely what guys are able to do in their first full season. You mentioned Yoan Moncada, Lucas Giolito, Carson Fulmer. I mean, those are three pivotal guys of this organization that are really going to rely on how successful the team is in the next coming years. You said it, Lucas Giolito had a fantastic spring. I got the numbers right here, 2.04 ERA, 17 strikeouts, 4 walks, 17 innings, and he's just taken the media by storm with his personality and his way to be well-versed with everybody. And that's a guy that you really would like to see at the top of the rotation, just to have it mentally there. And he's talked about having, you know, a quick, what's an easy forgetful memory when things go wrong and when things go well. I like his body frame. He's a big guy, but he's not too big. He's not as lanky as a Chris Sale type. But it's just, he just seems like he really has it all together. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to see what happens until the year starts. Carson Fulmer is a guy I could maybe see going back to AAA after a few outings this year.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if that's going to happen. It's been a lot of command issues with Fulmer this spring, and he kind of bounced back a little bit in his last couple starts. But, you know, I don't know for a guy like that how much it benefits bouncing back and forth between AAA. I mean,
right.
He's going to get rocked. I like the idea of keeping Hector Santiago as basically their swingman. He's the White Sox version of Mike Montgomery, mm-hmm. where he's going to give them long-inning relief out of the bullpen, but he can also spot start if they want to give one of these younger guys arms a rest. Fulmer's the guy I'm most anxiously waiting to see what happens with him this season, particularly early on, because didn't have the best spring,
mm-hmm.
and you can't put a whole lot of stock in the spring. We've said that over and over and over again. But a lot of command issues. So I'm really, really interested to see how Fulmer starts his season, and I'm interested to see how long of a leash the White Sox have for him. They're going to say, well, we'd rather just keep you up here. We're not trying to win games anyways. If it is about individual player growth, is it better just to have him around and have Don Cooper in his ear instead of bouncing back and forth? So that's one of the things I'm really interested to see is how Carson Fulmer responds to getting the fifth starting spot and not being demoted. Maybe that helps him out a little bit. I don't think it's a confidence issue anyways with him, but can't hurt to know.
I agree. He seems like he's got a very solid head on his shoulders.
He does, yeah.
And the other thing is the timing might work out so well for him in the White Sox this year because a lot of people think he's better suited as a reliever. So why not give him this year to see what he can do in the rotation? You mentioned the command issues. I mean, he's still got the stuff, though. So why not just give him a no-pressure situation pitching for this White Sox rebuilding team this year, see how he does in the long run, maybe test him out in the bullpen a little bit. Just get him out there and see how he's able to transition to that type of role. You look at his track record, though. I mean, he's from Vanderbilt. The White Sox are always great at grooming pitchers.
Yeah.
So you really don't see why he can't succeed. But it almost seems like the timing of this year could work out best to his benefit.
That's White Sox talk. That's Cubs talk. And I've been teasing it all show that I would get to the food review of some of the new items at Sox Park because it was media day today and I was out there. And I want to go through the rundown of some of the stuff. And I didn't try every single thing on this new food offerings list for Guaranteed Rate Field, but I did try pretty much all of the hot items, basically all of the non-dessert items I tried. Buffalo chicken empanada, pulled chicken served with the spicy buffalo sauce, 4 cheese mix, and queso blanco dip. That's in the club level and in the suites.
That sounds fantastic, not only because of everything you just described, but it's always great to have the easy eat foods at the ball game.
Yep. I'll get to that. That's a good point. Big fan of the empanadas. Was a little worried about them. Empanadas, when they're bad, they're bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if the crust has been non-crispy or if it's been sitting out under a heat lamp. It gets almost rubbery. It gets weird. It's like flaky in all the wrong spots. This was really good. If you get a chance to eat it, I would go all in. Many of these are strictly stadium and club level. In fact, all of these ones I'm about to go through are strictly club level and suite level, unfortunately. The knuckleballs, which I was a big fan of because I did feel like they had that convenience where you could basically walk around. The knuckleballs are provolone stuffed dough balls served with Parmesan garlic butter and house-made pajola sauce, club level and stadium club. So basically, it's just a dough ball, and they just you bite into it. It's a mini pizza puff, if you will. Sort of, yeah, but it's only cheese in it. There's no sauce. Okay. There's no sauce in it, but they have the sauce to dip. I thought those were really strong.
I'm looking at your picture now. So it's little cheese balls.
It's like a little
mozzarella stick.
Yeah, it's like a mozzarella stick, but in ball form.
That's to dumb it down. No, they do look fantastic.
And I do like the fact that it is easy to just, you can just grab those and pop them in. The
pop them in.
Pozzoli salad bowl. Call Dave Ennett on that one. That's the salad Dave was eating as the rest of us.
Now, I'm a big salad guy.
You're a big salad guy?
Well, that can mean two things. I like big salads, and yeah, I do like...
I eat salads all the time, but only because... making sure I don't gain weight. It's not like I like salad.
I can enjoy a good salad. Well, I mean, it's got to be dressed up.
I can enjoy salads too. Yeah, I mean, during the weekdays, I normally eat salads for lunch and then, you know, stuff my face on the weekends.
Just hate yourself while you shovel it down?
No, absolutely not. I got to eat salads, but if I didn't eat salads, I'd put a whole ton of weight on. But anyways, that's the Pozzoli salad bowl. It's a mix of chicken, cabbage, radish, cilantro, lime.
Okay.
And tortilla strips tossed in vinaigrette.
Sounds a little dry. Okay, there you go, vinaigrette.
Yeah, you get a vinaigrette. Okay, the Southside Horseshoe, the big one. This is the one that the White Sox are featuring at the MLB Food Fest in New York. Well, I think we talked about that, right?
A little bit, yeah, with the cheese and the fries. And
well, yeah, we've talked about the item a little bit, but the MLB Food Fest is in New York next month. And it's 2 days, and it's all the... You can get a ticket for $25, and you can go, and it's basically a food fest. Like, there's Wing Fest, there's Rib Fest, whatever it may be.
Station's not sending you out there?
No, unfortunately not.
$25, that's it?
Yeah, but I think it's sold out, like, in minutes.
Got it.
Anyways, every team from around the league has a featured item, and the White Sox are featuring the Southside Horseshoe. And this is a new feature, because when I had read that, I go, what the hell is that? I've never even seen that at Sox Park before. I had an idea of what a horseshoe was, sort of a central Illinois. It's basically an open-faced sandwich.
And that's what's a little bit unique about it, because it's not a Chicago thing.
No, but it's still, I guess, an Illinois thing, like a Midwest thing. It's kind of cool. But anyways,
some love.
A locally made Italian sausage patty served open-faced on thick-cut garlic toast with jardiniere. There's the Chicago flair.
Yeah.
Hand-cut fries and Modelo cheddar sauce.
That sounds... Okay, wow, that sounds fantastic. Have you ever had an Italian sausage patty?
Yes.
That's one of the best things.
They're awesome.
Yeah. At first,
I thought when I read this, it was going to be like crumbled Italian sausage, but it's a full-blown patty.
That's fantastic.
It was really good. I like that the most. I could do without the fries. I could do them on the side. But I don't know how anybody... This goes back to your convenience, the eating, and... Mm-hmm. and
you don't want
to
sit there with a fork and a knife and a tray.
You need a fork and a knife and a tray.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this thing's featured only at club level, so you can probably have a seat or a table somewhere to sit. But very good. I don't know how anybody... And this is coming from me, to eat a whole one of these things.
Yeah, how did you try it? I mean, they had to slice them in fours.
Okay. So they were just
and
a little
you just
slower.
Had a fourth of it.
Yeah, and I was like, damn, that's a lot.
and you had the knuckleballs.
And I had one knuckleball.
And a Cuban.
Okay, and we didn't even get to that yet.
Sorry, jumping the gun. Well, really, wait, hold on.
Yes.
1 second, the Food Fest. Ben brought it up before. Did you see the Texas Rangers Food Fest
Which
item?
One was the Rangers again?
Do you want to take it away, Ben?
They took a giant dill pickle, hollowed it out, stuck the hot dog inside it, and then deep fried the entire thing.
Saw that. I'd eat it.
Yeah.
Joe?
I'd eat four. That sounds amazing.
Oh, you do think that sounds good.
Oh, yeah.
I could see some people being completely disgusted by that.
Big pickle guy, big corn dog guy.
Okay. Yeah, I'm in with
What's
you.
The line from Superbad that I won't say?
What is it? So you're going to say it.
What, you know what foods are shaped like? You know what? The best kinds.
The best kinds. That's not from... What did you say it's from?
Superbad.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought you said Super Troopers. Superbad.
No, no.
The best kinds.
That's everything combined in one.
Big, veiny, triumphant.
Yeah.
All right. The Cuban burger. Well, maybe we should go to the specialty sausages to segue off of that. Johnsonville specialty sausages. Okay, they have three different specialty sausages, and we have like 60 seconds here. They have the slurve, the changeup, and the cutter.
Yeah, okay, I'm glad you brought this up. I wanted to hear
So the cutter, a Johnsonville, like a southwestern chorizo, and there's some guacamole on top. The changeup's a Chipotle Monterey Jack chicken sausage with some salsa fresca on top. That was my least favorite of the three because I felt like I was just eating a sausage with salsa dumped on top.
Got it.
Didn't really work all that well. The cutter was good. It was what you'd expect. Chorizo, the guacamole was nice because you got the hot.
I think
cool.
that would be my favorite. You said you like the slurve.
The slurve's the best. And I knew the slurve was going to be the best. It's a juicy Johnsonville cheddar beer bratwurst topped with caramelized onions and spicy deli mustard. I mean, that's like a perfect specialty sausage right there. So I would go the slurve. That's available in section 126 and 535. And then the Cuban burger, a juicy Glenmark all beef hamburger patty topped with sliced ham, pork, sliced pickles, Swiss cheese, yellow mustard, and some mojo sauce. Sections 113 and 528. I recommend it. I would split it with someone to cut it in half because that's a lot.
Is it big?
Yeah. It's a big burger.
How big? The Cuban. I'm sorry.
The Cuban burger. Yeah. That was the Cuban burger.
That looks fantastic. It does.
I don't even think we're going to have time for buried headlines. That's the buried headlines are kind of there as a buffer in case we have nothing else to talk about. Well, we could have went till 3 o'clock, Joe. Okay, what are your corrections, Ben?
I got two for you. So the extension on Sox Park, all right, for your Shy Sox Bar and Grill, originally was TBD's, built in 2010, and then they changed
it. Then it was Bacardi at the park for a while, and then I think it was Jim Beam or something.
Yep, and then Chicago Sports Depot opened November 19th, 2011.
Okay.
And then after that, Wade Davis. 3-year, $52 million deal includes a 4-year vesting option.
Right. What was the number again? 52?
Yeah.
52.
Got it.
But with the vesting option, it could total up to $66 million if he finishes 30 games or more in 2020.
Got it. There you have it. Thank you for the corrections, Ben Anderson. He's the producer. Thanks to him for his assistance today. Joe Brand sitting in for the second straight day. Thanks for jumping on, man. This was fun.
Thanks for having me. Like good old days, huh?
Yeah, today's show flew by. I think it's because we were talking food.
Probably. Getting hungry.
There's some good interview with Ed Fritz, the high school basketball coach for Clayton Custer and Ped Richardson, Loyola Rambler Stars. He joined Steve Cochran and Dave Bennett. We played that back. Subscribe on iTunes. Review, rate. Then unsubscribe, resubscribe, do that whole thing. Google Play as well, WGNRadio.com. I'm Kevin Powell. He's Joe Brand. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it. Adam Hogue will be back on Sports Central tomorrow. Have a great day, everyone.